Listening Library presents Conversations with God for Teens by Neil Donald Walsh. Read for you by the author, LeVar Burton, Alanis Morissette, and a full cast. Forward.
Over the years, I have, at times, been overwhelmed with how many emotions I've felt, and how many questions I found myself asking, and the fiery passion by which these questions were fueled. I've seen these questions cover the whole spectrum throughout my life. Everything from who's God, and where do I go when I die, to why am I here, to why do I feel so horrible about my body, to why is there such shame surrounding sex, to why war, and millions of others in between, far too many to list. I felt many resistances brewing within me toward the answers I was being given in school, and from those I was encouraged to look up to. There were many answers that heartened and resonated. There were also answers with the message being one of choicelessness, of patriarchy, of there being one singular goal in life toward which our whole lives were to be focused if we wanted to be successful, and answers about what successful itself meant. There were messages of intolerance and judgment, of exclusion and competition. All of these messages, and many more, were at odds with what I felt somewhere within me. They seemed confusing and misleading, inconsistent and hypocritical, and yet these views were at the center of what I was being taught. I was being sent the message of our being separate, of our being better or worse than each other, of there not being enough of anything to the point that we had to fight to get what we could. That I was bad if I wanted something that differed from what was perceived as right by my teachers or my community or society as a whole. These and many other messages were absorbed by me, not without resistance, and not without confusion, but I tried them on for size in moments just the same. Some I tried on for a millisecond and discarded. Some I tried on for years to be discarded later. Some are still being mulled over today. At that time, I also chose not to revisit the religion I had left behind from the time I was 12 years old, for what I perceived to be its hypocritical messages and its rigidity and exclusivity. The most difficult part of my leaving it behind was the fact that I had been left with the challenge of establishing an entirely new relationship with God. With my religionlessness, I found myself not knowing where to begin. And while I believed in God, it would be years from the time I said goodbye to religion before I connected again with my newly defined God in a way that I felt clear and good about. One day, after a tour that lasted a year and a half had ended, I sat alone in my backyard, a place I often sit in moments of deep reflection. An inner conflict had arisen out of my feeling both grateful beyond description for my being able to create and experience all that I had, and feeling uncomfortable with, overwhelmed and disillusioned by how isolating and distancing, among many other things, these same experiences were. I had achieved everything that I was taught by my family and the world at large to achieve. As I reflected, I realized that these achievements felt like natural outcomes of my efforts, and that my efforts were motivated by many different things. Of these motivations, there were two that I found to be the most obvious. The first one, and the biggest, being my desire to honestly express and understand myself and the world I lived in. The desire to then, in turn, share these personal revelations and love with people came from my feeling that it may validate others' experiences and offer encouragement or comfort if there was anything they could relate to. I felt that it may have resulted in us feeling more connected if we found ourselves having had similar experiences. And that in my offering compassion to myself, I might also be inspiring others to offer the same to themselves. And at the very least, my expressions could be something that people had the opportunity to define themselves in accordance to by their loving or hating it. The second motivating force was my desire to work well past the point of self-care, to satisfy the curiosity I felt about what it was like to achieve the success that society was saying I had to achieve in order to be of any value as a person. At this point in my life, I had experienced what society had said was the pinnacle to attain, yet I still felt like I was missing something. I was determined to understand what that was. So I went to India with the intention of getting some distance from the pressure that I felt to continue producing at breakneck speed. I went to reflect and to gain as much objectivity on my life as I could. I joked with a friend that what I went to India to do, I could have done in my own backyard. but it was easier to be in a place where I wouldn't hear, "When's your next record coming out?" A harmless enough question in and of itself, but not one that helped my situation at the time. Most importantly, I went within when I went to India. And while I was not completely unfamiliar with going within, I'd never gone quite as deeply as this. What I found proved to be an even more awe-inspiring landscape than any country I'd ever been to. I took this literal and figurative trip post-first dose of fame, post-status achieving, post-manifesting my truest form of expression, and experiencing all the results of that. Propelled by a desire to feel a kind of peace I had not yet experienced, I felt a great willingness to truly let go of everything. I was willing to let go of every material possession I had, every symbol of status. I felt ready to do anything that I felt was needed to do to break through all the illusion and to find this peace. I was even willing to let go of any desire to express through writing and through music, which were forms of expression in which I had found such comfort from the time that I was very young. All this is to say that I was ruthlessly ready to do what it took to be peaceful, and I wasn't sure what that was. A lot of what I had been doing was not working, and I wasn't feeling the joy that I felt was my birthright. As it turns out, losing everything was not what was needed for me to find peace and clarity, but it was the willingness to do whatever it took, and my openness to grow into very unfamiliar territories that I think played the biggest role in my eventually experiencing it. I felt ready to let go of any expectations that I or anyone else had of me. Wanting to see who my true friends were, I reevaluated every friendship. At one point, I remember telling a friend that I wondered whether at this particular time it was time for me to die, because it felt like such a death of sorts. Apparently not, and I'm glad about that. I investigated the voices in my head that played messages of anything other than love, and I am still editing these tapes to this day. I wanted to get clear about what I felt my true purpose in life was: to evolve, express, define, accept, and love myself, and to honor and encourage this in others as best as I can. I brought many of the things I had been taught into the light to see whether they helped serve this purpose. It was a beautiful and terrifying time. I am now happy to feel that level of rebirth when I wake up in the mornings. Not all the time, but a lot. My life didn't change as much outwardly as I was fully prepared for it to, but the shifts inside changed my relationship to many things. There was a very life-altering book that I took with me on that trip to India that greatly impacted me and helped me cut through to my deepest truths in the way I did. And that book was Conversations with God, Book 1 by Neil Donald Walsh. A friend of mine handed it to me shortly before I left on the trip. I think she saw the space I was in and felt this book might offer the encouragement and insight that I was ready to receive. It offered that and so much more. In the finding of this book, I immediately felt less alone, more understood, affirmed. I felt less crazy. Many a recognition tear was shed during the reading of it. I felt validated and inspired and comforted. I felt connected with all of life and encouraged. I felt recognized. God in this book was how I had always envisioned God to be: unconditionally loving, consistent, and without expectation. It felt like coming home. I know that this book came to me at the perfect time in my life. I also know that having the companionship of a book like this could have saved me from having many a moment of needless suffering and isolation in the years prior to my having read it. I am so happy to know that this book is out there now, for you to read if you choose at this point in your life. And I am very happy to know that now there is a version of this message available for young people. May you be touched by it the way I have been by this and all the CWG books, and may you know that many people, of all generations, are proud and relieved to know that you are part of shaping the future. I send a huge hug to you for the courage and openness it takes to listen to an audiobook like this, and I thank you so much for your contribution here on this earth, regardless of what form it takes. Whether it be considered grand or sweetly simple by your definition, I thank you. And I believe the world thanks you for being exactly who you are right now. Take great care of yourself. I send much love. Alanis Morissette.
Chapter 1. Finally, Answers. Suppose you could ask God any questions you wanted. Questions like, "Why can't my parents stay in love and stay married?" Or, How do you decide who gets to be Alanis Morissette or Michael Jordan and who gets to live regular lives? Or, why can't I just have sex and have it be okay with everybody? What's the big deal? And suppose you received responses to your questions. Responses like, your parents can stay in love and stay married, but it would require a shift in the things they believe for them to do so. You can also be very okay and live a happy life if your parents do not stay together, but that would require a shift in the things you believe. I do not decide who gets to be Alanis Morissette and who gets to live regular lives. You do. You are making those choices right now. The problem is, you don't know that you're doing it, or how. You can have as much sex as you want every day of your life, and it will be very okay with everybody. But first, you must understand what sex is, and that may not be what you think. Would you want to hear more? You're about to. This audiobook contains questions just like that, from teenagers all over the world. The responses you'll find here have been placed here for your consideration only. This audiobook has not come here to give you the answers. The last thing you need is someone else giving you the answers. The hope is that this audiobook will place you in touch with your own answers. When you are in touch with your own answers, the hopelessness that you may sometimes feel inside can be ended. This audiobook is the result of a conversation with God. Okay, so you don't even know if there is a God, much less whether we can have a conversation, right? Well, don't worry about that right now. If you don't believe in God, consider this book a work of fiction. I won't mind. It'll still be a good message, maybe the best message you've ever heard. I do think that God exists, and I believe that God communicates with us. I have conversations with God all the time. How those conversations take place will be explained in just a bit. For now, please consider the possibility that this audio program was brought into your life to change your life if you choose for it to, and to change the life of the world around you, if that is also what you desire. And don't think for a minute that it came to you by accident. You called this audio program to you. You called it to you because you live in an insane world and you want to change it. Somewhere inside, somewhere deep inside, you know how life could be. You know that we're not supposed to be hurting each other here. You know that no one has the right to seek it all, to take it all, to hoard it all, while others have so little. You know that might is not right. You know that truth is what matters, and openness, and transparency, and fairness. Not hidden agendas and under-the-table dealings and behind-the-scenes maneuverings and getting the advantage. You know that when you get the advantage at the expense of someone else being disadvantaged, there is no advantage in that at all. You know this, and you know more. You know that so much of the stuff they teach in school is pointless. Where are the classes in sharing power, cooperative living, accepting differences and celebrating diversity? Shameless sexuality, understanding unconditional love. Where are the courses in sustainable living, responsible economics, and collective consciousness? Where are the courses that are relevant? Cannot reading, writing, and arithmetic be taught through relevant courses rather than instead of them? Of course they can, and you know they can. You know this, and you know more. You know that our political systems on this planet suck. They don't work. We can't even elect a president and have every vote count. We can't even find a way to have the election process work, much less the process of politics after the election. You know this, and you know more. You know that hypocrisy reigns supreme in the lives of too many people. Not all people, but too many people. They say one thing and do another. And they think you don't see it. They think you're not watching. Or that you're not smart enough to know that what you're looking at, pure and simple, is hypocrisy. You know this, and you know more. You know what is rewarded in this society and what is not, and that in this, we have it all backward. You know that we pay $30 million for someone to play first base for the New York Yankees, and $30,000 for someone to nurse our sick, or teach our children, or minister to our disheartened, and that this is crazy. You know this, and you know more. You know that you live in a society which keeps trying to use the energy which created a problem to solve the problem, which uses killing to stop people from killing, which uses violence to put an end to violence, which uses injustice in the name of justice, inequality in the name of equality, intolerance in the name of tolerance, wars in the name of peace, and insanity in the search for a sane tomorrow. What is wrong with this picture, you ask? And you know what is wrong. You don't need anyone to tell you. You only want someone to do something about it. You only want someone to be able to do something about it. Because until now, it's all looked pretty hopeless. And why has it looked so hopeless? Basically, because everyone's lying about it. No one wants to tell it like it really is. Well, all that's going to change. Right here. Right now. With this conversation. Chapter 2. Truth Time. You tell the truth. That's what's cool about you. I mean, you don't go around trying to kid yourself or trying to fool everybody else. You just are. And that's what it is. And if others don't like it, well, then that's what that is. And you're not going to change yourself because of something like that, right? Okay, that means you're ready. Because people who tell the truth are usually ready to hear the truth. That's good. Because we're going to do something really interesting here. We're going to have a conversation with God. But if you're not ready, it won't work. Oh, the conversation part will work, because you can't stop that. All of us are having conversations with God every minute of every day. What won't work is your ability to get it. You'll hear it, but you won't get it. It's like a lot of things in life. You've got to be ready. Right now, most of the world is stuck. It's been stuck for half a century. 50-year-old ideas, half-century-old ways of doing things. That's what you see out there right now, a lot. They're not ready. The people who live and breathe these ideas, I mean. The people who swear by them, they're not ready. Not for change, and not for the answers that would create change. Not most of them, anyway. Most of them aren't ready. I think you are. So let me explain what's going on here. I wrote a book called Conversations with God because I wanted to know why my life wasn't working, why it always seemed to have to be such a continuing struggle, what the rules were, and how I could play and not lose all the time. I also wanted to know the point of it all. What resulted from that call for help was a dialogue with God that I had in my mind and placed on paper. Other people found value in it, and it wound up being translated into 27 languages. My questions continued, and more books followed. Then someone asked, "Why don't you do a book for teenagers?" And I said, "Because I wouldn't know what to ask about." And they replied, "Why not let them tell you?" That's when I started asking teenagers, in person and through the internet, if you could ask God any question, what would it be? I received hundreds of replies. Here are some of them. Why do you let children get abused sexually and physically? How come everyone wasn't born smart? Why is the world filled with hate? What's the deal with the generation gap? Why can't parents just talk with us? And why is there so much pressure from parents, from school, from everyone? Is my life controlled by fate? Why are we taught facts and not ideas in school? Will I return to you, and will you be happy with me? How come I have to pay adult ticket prices at the movies when I'm 13, but I can't see an R movie? That's stupid. Why do we have to have 3 hours of homework after 7 hours of school? I'm confused and scared about what to make of my newly found sexual identity. How can I present that to the people I love? How come people make such dumb laws? If you made us, then who made you? How is it that a God of mercy can be such an isolationist and so intolerant to other views? How can a God of infinite mercy condemn anyone for anything? Why condemn magic that heals? Why condemn for eternity those transgressions that are momentary? Why is it that my parents notice only the things that I do wrong? How come adults want respect but don't give it back? Why do people die? Why can't we live forever? What really is life after death? Why is it that I can die for my country at 18, but I can't enjoy a cold beer on a hot day? I feel as if I need to be successful at everything. My parents seem to desperately want that. But what is success? I don't know whether to hang with the popular preppy kids or the cast-off grungy kids. Why does everyone have to separate? Why do my parents freak out about sex? My God, they freak out! Now, aren't those great questions? They'll all be addressed here, as will many others that were asked. Questions about dealing with authority, about choosing the right career, about drugs, about marrying or living together, about how the experiences of our lives are created, and even about what God looks like. Let's get to one of those questions now so you can see how the process plays out. And then I want to explain to you how my method of receiving the responses works. This question was given to me by a young woman named Varinia.
Why do you let children get abused sexually and physically?
Here is the answer I received.
Varinia, my lovely, lovely friend, I know that you wish deeply in your soul that cruelty of all kinds could be eliminated from the earth. So many people wish that, and so many are working for that. There is so much sexual abuse in the world because there is so much sexual repression in the world. Humans have been taught from the time they were very young to be ashamed of their body parts and embarrassed or guilty about their sexuality. The result is that millions of people have sexual hang-ups you wouldn't believe. Later in this conversation, we'll talk about how you can help change all that and how you can deal with whatever hang-ups the people around you may have. But you did not ask me why there was sexual and physical abuse in the world. You asked me why I allowed it, and I'm aware that that's an entirely different question.
Yes, it is. So why do you allow it?
When I created life as you know it, I did so by simply separating myself into countless smaller parts of me. This is another way of saying that you were made in the image and likeness of God. Now, because God is the creator, that means all of you are creators too. You have free will, just as I have free will. If I had not given you free will, you could not create, but only react. If you could only do what I tell you to do, then you could not create, but only obey. Obedience is not creation. It is an act of subservience, not an act of power.
God is not subservient to anyone, and since you are a part of God, you are by nature not subservient to anyone either. That is why when you are made to be subservient, you immediately revolt. It is against your very nature. It is a violation of who you are at the very core of your being. Teenagers know this more than anyone.
But what about those human beings who have done things with their free will that has been very hurtful to others?
There have been many people like that, and it is true that I could have stopped this. I did not stop it because the process of life itself is the expression of free will. Anything less than that is not life, but death. Even when the expression of free will does not serve the highest good, it must be allowed, or freedom itself is a mockery. The word freedom and the word God are interchangeable. You cannot have one without the other. For God to exist, freedom must exist. The beauty of freedom, however, is that it can be expressed by all beings, not just a few. This means that the people of the earth are free to eliminate the experiences of sexual abuse and physical abuse from their collective experience forever. They are also free to eliminate other conditions of cruelty and misery that they now endure.
How?
That's the question this book will answer.
Now that's the kind of dialogue you're going to find throughout the rest of this program. All of the lead questions, the questions that start off a portion of the dialogue, came from young people just like yourself. Some of the follow-up questions are questions that I asked, because I felt that those asking the first question would have asked the follow-ups if they had the chance. To understand more fully how this conversation process works, it will help you to know that, as I've said, all of us are having conversations with God every day, and that includes you. You just may not have called them that. God is talking to all of us all the time. We are continually being communicated with by the universe. Life is constantly telling life about life. Life is always sending us messages. True wisdom may be found in the chance utterance of a friend you meet on the street, in the lyrics to the next song you hear on the radio, the words that confront you, big as life, on the billboard around the next corner, the voice that you hear whispering inside your head, or this audio program that just happened to come into your hands. Now substitute the word God for the words true wisdom in the above sentence, and you'll understand how your conversation with God works. God has never, ever stopped inspiring the human race. And God inspires us by sending us messages, ideas, thoughts, song lyrics, words for a book, you name it. In my own life, God's conversations most often take the form of thoughts that fill my head, especially when I'm asking for help with a serious question, and when I'm willing to be quiet enough to hear the answer. God speaks to me in a voice that doesn't sound like anyone's voice in particular. It is what I have called a voiceless voice, something like the voice of your own thoughts. Now you might say, well, they are your own thoughts. What makes you think this is the voice of God? That's a fair question. When I asked God that question, here's the answer that I heard.
Neil, if I was going to communicate with you, how else would I do it? Wouldn't putting thoughts into your head be one of the most effective ways? When Thomas Aquinas had thoughts in his head about theology, wasn't he said to have been inspired by God? When Amadeus Mozart had thoughts in his head about music, wasn't he said to have been inspired by God? When Thomas Jefferson had thoughts in his head about freedom, wasn't he said to have been inspired by God to write a declaration about one nation under God? How do you think that I communicate with people if it is not by putting thoughts in their head? Do you think that I show up at their doorstep in a long white robe and hand them a scroll? Do you think that I appear in a cloud of mist over their bed and boom my wisdoms into the air? Would that be more believable to you?
Is this how you have it? That the more unbelievable something is, the more believable it is? I'll tell you this. I come to people in the way that is most believable. I do this for a very good reason. I want to be believed. Yet even then you do not believe me. For most people, the most believable way for God to show up in their lives would be as an apparition, with me appearing in robes and handing over a tablet. I have done those things, yes. But do you think I am limited to those things? More often, much more often, I come to people in a much more natural way, as a much more integral part of life itself. This could be as a thought, as a feeling, or as an inspiration, just as I'm coming to you now through the feelings you are having and the words you are hearing right now.
Those are the words that came to me, and that's how the process works. Now, it might sound good if I said that I ponder my questions for hours, meditating and praying and remaining in the stillness until I'm brought to enlightenment and tremble with the energy of God flowing through my fingertips. But the truth is, I put down the first thing that comes to my head. There's no editing, no changing, no toning down or fixing up. It's just a matter of hearing it and writing it down. It's just like taking dictation. I've been doing this for 10 years now, ever since the circumstances of my life caused me to reach out to God and beg for help. This latest book was written just for you, just for teenagers, not only because someone suggested it, but also because I've received hundreds of letters from teenagers all over the world telling me how impacted they were by the original Conversations with God books, and loaded with additional questions. After 2 years of talking to young people like yourself and collecting questions, I asked a young person just like you to be my assistant and to put them all into categories so that I could approach them in some kind of sequence. In a few cases, I sent the response back to the teenagers asking the question to see if it brought up any reaction or further question from them. As I said, I've also added some questions of my own that I thought the original questioners would have asked if they could have been here to keep the conversation going. There are also questions that I wanted to ask on my own. I put those in here too. And so I mingled my voice with yours, and in this way I created a dialogue. Sometimes the responses I received were directed right to me, and sometimes they were directed to the person asking the original question. I believe that some might also be directed right to you, listening to this audio program. It was very exciting for me to create this program, and I feel that in your listening to it, there is a possible magic about to happen. The first thing that will occur as you hear the questions and the responses is that you will A. agree with a response, B. disagree with a response, C. fall somewhere in between. Then will come the magic. This will be the moment when the responses cause you to notice what you think and how you feel. You'll be placed in touch with your own wisdom within. That's the wonder and the magic of every good conversation. And it is the purpose of all of your conversations with God. Chapter 3. The Changers. You guys are fascinating and want to know everything. You haven't stopped asking questions yet. Some adults are like that, but many are not. Too many. They've bought into a religion or a philosophy or a political party or all three, and they're done asking questions. They think they've got the answers. They don't. The world today is not acting as if it has any answers at all that make sense. But most of the world is not ready to hear this. I think that you are. That doesn't make you better, it just makes you different. Different is not better, it's just different. It's important for you to know the difference. It's also important for you to know the difference that you can make, because you are different. Look, you guys are at the edge of it. You're at the furthermost point. But you have to know, I have to tell you, that being different just for the sake of being different is child's play. Being different for the sake of making a difference is another thing altogether. That's for those who want their lives to count for something. Not in the eyes of others. You already know that isn't important. But in their own eyes. There are some people who make a real difference on this planet with their lives, and these people can ultimately change the world. They may not change it by becoming world leaders and impacting the entire planet, although some of them certainly will. They may not change it by standing above the crowd and saying, "Follow me," although some of them will. And they may not change it by writing best-selling books, or appearing in meaningful movies, or singing significant songs, although some of them will. They will change it by quietly moving through the world, largely unseen, but always remembered by those whose lives they touch. They will change it by being different, by acting in a different way, by marching to a different drummer, by living life differently, as if they had different rules. This is what is meant by being different, not simply to be different, but to make a difference. Now, some might say, "What difference does it make? Nothing ever changes." Ah, but those who say this do not know that our individual lives can change, and the world can change too. There are people, many of them teenagers, who are lifting the collective consciousness around them right now. Some are doing it in very public ways, some in private ways, but they are doing it. These are the changers. It's just the way they are. It's just who they are. Everything changes the moment they walk into a room. Everything gets lighter, feels different. Suddenly it's all good, and the world, if only for that moment, becomes a nicer place. You know the kind of person we're talking about. You can be that kind of person. You may be showing up like that right now. You may already be one of the changers. The question is not whether you are a changer, but what it is that you next seek to change. All of this is what led you to this audiobook. As I told you, you called it to you. It may have come to you by an indirect route, but that doesn't mean you didn't make an active choice to listen to it. At some level you did, believe me, or you wouldn't be listening to it right now. You may have called it to you at a subconscious level, but you called it to you. Why? Because you want changes, and you want them now. Not next year, not some other time, not some day in the future, but right now. Because you're ready. You're ready to experience, right here, right now, the wisdom that resides within you, the courage that is yours, and the truth in your heart. You're anxious to apply that truth to life. You'd like the whole world to apply its highest truths, because there must be another way to live. You know that. That's obvious to you. Like I said, a lot of people don't want to find new answers or create changes. Not now. Not ever. They're not willing to look at the way things are, much less at the way they could be. They're not ready. You are. You definitely are if you've listened this long. Chapter 4. The Dialogue Begins. As I pondered where to begin this dialogue, I thought of those questions that I heard over and over again, in one form or another, everywhere I went. These are the questions that were begging to be answered. So I started there, punching them into the computer and following with the first thing that came to my head. I trust that God inspired the response, and all the responses to all the questions in this book. Let the dialogue begin.
Why is the world the way it is? Why can't we stop the killing and the suffering? Why can't we find a way to get along, to be nice to each other, to love each other? And is it always going to have to be this way? Is there nothing that anyone can do to change it? Should I just give up, have no hope, forget trying to make things different because it's not going to work anyway? Okay, God, if there is a God, what's up?
Am I glad you asked that? Good question. A bunch of good questions and a very good place to start. But first, thanks for coming to this dialogue. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk with you this way. I'm talking with you all the time, which is something that you may or may not realize, but not in this way. So I'm glad to have this direct line of communication open between us. Oh, and by the way, yes, I do exist. There is a God. We'll talk more about that later, too. Right now, I don't want to get off the topic here. These first questions are very important. The world is the way it is because that is the way human beings have created it. It is not necessary for the world to be this way, but it is necessary for life to reflect your every thought about it. The collective thoughts of the human race and its aggregate ideas from the beginning of time until now are reflected in the world in which you live.
Your species has not been able to stop the killing and the suffering because your species has had a killing and suffering mentality. Those who have come before you have believed that killing is justified as a means of resolving their disagreements, or getting what they want, or think they need. They have also believed that suffering is a normal part of life. Some of them have even said that it is required by God. It is from these beliefs that the present human experience has arisen. It is out of these understandings that your elders create their everyday reality, and yours. You can find a way to get along, to be nice to each other, and to love each other, but it would require you to give up these beliefs, and that is not something that those who have come before you have been willing to do. Do not give up hope. Do not ever stop trying to change the world, unless you are satisfied with the world the way it is. There is only one reason to change the world, or to change anything, and that is in order to make a statement of who you are. This is the purpose of all of life.
What is the purpose of life? I don't understand this. What are you saying here? What is the point of life and of it being the way it is? What is the meaning of life?
The point of life is to provide a way in which all that is, which many of you call God, can know itself experientially. Put another way, life is God experiencing itself.
If life, the way we're living it on this planet, with all the killing, all the suffering, all the greed and selfishness, is God experiencing itself, then I don't want to have anything to do with God.
That's understandable, because right now you don't see the gift.
What gift?
The gift that I have given to the human race.
You call the way life is now a gift?
Yes, because you are getting it exactly the way you want it. You are always having your way.
That's not the way most teenagers experience it. In fact, I don't know any teenagers who experience it that way.
Life is not the way most teenagers want it because teenagers are not the most powerful people in your world, and your world is presently being created by the most powerful people among you. For the most part, those are members of the older generation. And not all of them, only a tiny percentage of them.
I know, that's the problem.
When you decide as a species that it is no longer going to be this way, it will no longer be that way.
Yeah, right. Teenagers are going to take over the world.
Teenagers are not going to take over the world. And in truth, you wouldn't want them to. It takes the combined wisdom of all ages to make the kind of world in which you wish to live. A well-rounded world with differing points of view, filled with people of differing experiences, offering everyone the fun and the excitement of creating jointly acceptable outcomes from differing starting places. So no, teenagers are not going to take over the world. But in years to come, all people will have more to say about their lives and their future if you decide that this is the way you want it.
Sure.
Really, the reason that a tiny percentage of the people control the lives of the largest number is because the larger number allows it to.
How can they stop it from happening when the smaller number of people have all the power? You just said so yourself. They have the power.
Power is something that is given. It cannot be taken. It is given. And it is given away because those who give it away think that they are powerless. The irony is that they are powerless because they have given their power away. In truth, they have all the power they want. They simply don't want it.
Yeah, teenagers have all the power they want. They just don't want it. Right.
It's true. Think about it for a moment. The power that your parents have over you is power that you give them. If you did not want to give them power, they would have none. If you did not want to do what they told you to do, there is nothing they could do about it. The reason that teenagers give their power to their parents is that their parents have something that teenagers want. This could be anything from love, to a place to live, food and clothes, to money with which to buy what you want, a car for you to drive, or whatever. As soon as you no longer want what your parents have, or no longer need it, your parents have lost complete control of you. In the meantime, you are simply using your behavior, in this case your obedience to your parents, as a means of getting what you want. This is one exercise of power.
It sounds like manipulation to me.
It is, if it is done dishonestly. It is not, if it is done openly, honestly, with everyone understanding your agenda, and you understanding everyone else's. Then you have a shared agenda, mutual goals, and there's nothing manipulative in that. So, it turns out, it is you who are the powerful one.
I never thought of it that way.
That is why you have brought yourself to this audiobook. Because you are ready to. The conversation we will have here will bring you many insights and reveal many secrets.
So you are saying that the oppressed people of the world are not really oppressed? They are powerful?
I am saying that at some point in time there was something that they wanted, and they traded in their power for that. Maybe they thought that those who are now oppressing them would give them security, or a better life. So the largest number of those oppressed people looked the other way.
Maybe they thought that if they did not look the other way, but rather complained and began to revolt, that they would be killed. Since what they wanted was to live, no matter what the circumstances, they got what they wanted. That is true power. True power is getting what you want.
Oh, sure. When the alternative is death, you're getting what you want by not complaining. Yeah, right. Boy, you've got a pretty weird way of seeing things.
Wait a minute. There are those who have chosen the alternative. Brave people in all nations and times have made that choice. That is why humans have always honored those who have struggled and died to make others free. The people who worked hard in the beginning to create the United States and to free themselves from what they felt was the tyranny of Great Britain did so at the risk of losing everything, didn't they? The signers of the Declaration of Independence said that in the cause of freedom, they were pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they were. The founding fathers of America said things like, "Give me liberty or give me death," and they meant it. Against such courage, oppressors have no power. In moments of such declarations, it becomes clear where the true power really lies and where it has always been. This has been demonstrated throughout human history. As soon as those who were oppressed decided that they were not living a better life, but rather a life not worth living, they took their power back and dismantled their government. The very government that was supposed to be so powerful suddenly fell, silent and weak, unable to do anything about its own dismantling. This is exactly what happened not only in those old British colonies now known as the United States, but all over the world. Some more recent examples include the former Soviet Union, the former Yugoslavia, and South Africa, to name just a few. Where the people have said, this far and no further, the oppression stops. Where the people have still not gathered the will or the strength to do that, the oppression continues. It is the same in your own household. It is the same in your own life. As soon as you decide that you would rather not have what you have been trading your power for, you reclaim that power and then get what you choose. What you have reclaimed is the inherent power with which you have been born. This is called original power. It is the essence of who you really are. This is what I have termed the gift.
Original power?
Yes.
We all have it?
Yes.
Even babies?
Yes, only they don't know it. They don't remember. Most people don't remember, even when they get older. Most adults still do not remember. They are living in what could be described as a state of amnesia, in which they have forgotten that they have this original power.
What is this power, and what can we do with it?
It is the power of God. It is my power. It is who and what I am. Have you not been told that you have been made in the image and likeness of God?
I've heard that, yeah.
Yet most of you do not know what this means. You think that you have been born in original sin, and you believe this. I tell you now that you've been born in original power.
What can we do with it? You didn't answer my question before. What can we do with it?
Create.
Create?
Create. Original power is the power to create.
Create what?
Anything you like. Whatever you choose.
Yeah, right.
Really? This power is not just what you have. It is what you are. You have and are the power to create. And if you knew this, your whole life would change.